case will be taken under advisement, and we will go on to case number 042572, Heisey v. Ashcroft. And good morning, Mr. Mwangi. The trains were running today.
Your Honor, thank God they were. But as we pulled into Chicago, power went off. But we were really eyeing the station, so it wasn't that big a deal this time. Tuesday was a different story. But thank you very much, Your Honor. Good morning, Judge Rovner, Judge
morning.
Evans, Judge Sykes. My name is Godfrey Mwangi, as Judge Rovner has informed you. I represent the petitioner, Mr. Heisey, and this appeal is an appeal from the Board of Immigration Appeals, but really resulting in a review of the immigration judge's decision, because the board affirmed without opinion, and under this court's holdings in Georges versus Ashcroft, the IJ's decision is reviewable. There are two passages in the record that I believe are very important from the outset to focus on. The first in the transcript before the IJ at page 176, in the record at page 228, where Judge Smith, for the record, says the following: I'm going to keep this matter on master calendar status for October 8, 2002 at 11. That's approximately 6 months from now. Hopefully we'll have a response back by then. I don't anticipate that I'll be here, but I'm going to leave specific instructions for the next immigration judge, because I'm of the opinion that if, in fact, these documents are legitimate and the hospital document is found to be legitimate with no alterations, nothing fraudulent whatsoever about the document, I think the respondent has met his burden in establishing eligibility for the relief requested. However, on the other hand, if anything whatsoever is found to be fraudulent about these documents, that taints the entire claim, and in that case, I don't think anything the respondent said can be believed, and it should be denied. And those are the instructions I'm going to leave the next immigration judge. Okay. Then, on October 8th, Judge Giambastiani, who has assumed the file after Judge Smith had moved to Orlando, holds a hearing and says the following: So this matter was recalendered based on the suspicion of fraud having been committed in some of the supporting documents. I also have a note in the file from the previous immigration judge who presided over the entire history of this case and the proceedings, where significant testimony and documentation was taken into the record, indicating that if the documents were returned as being fraudulent, a lengthy written decision would have to be prepared by the court. I also had a note in here that the previous immigration judge wanted hospital documents submitted to forensic document lab. Ms. Kostich, I don't believe that that was done, was it? No, was the answer from Ms. Kostich. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. You submitted this morning to me a copy of a report from the forensic document lab examiner, Elaine Wooten, indicating that, in fact, that some of the newspaper articles submitted were tampered with, so they were not what they purported to be. I'm going to close this case for written decision today, but I'm leaving open the possibility of having to recalendar this. I'm in the difficult position of having to dispose of this case basically at the end of the game, so I'm going to try and decide the best way to resolve this. But for now, I'm going to issue a written decision, or a written decision will be rendered. If that isn't the right course of action, I will recalendar the case. And the record was closed. Now, we argue that there isn't sufficient evidence in this record to support the IJ's conclusion when she finally made the decision that, and if you look at the IJ's decision on page 8 of that decision in the record at page 43, she concludes, the service's forensic document laboratory concluded that the articles were fraudulent. That is objectively wrong. That is not the conclusion of that laboratory. The IJ also says on the next page of her decision, the testimony of the expert witness will be given minimal weight because the majority of his conclusions and the conclusions of his alleged sources were based on the respondent's misrepresentation that he published certain articles speaking out against the Democratic and Socialist parties. Again, that is objectively wrong because it is not supported by anything in this record. I have in my hand the Forensic Document Laboratory report, and it states the following. Findings. Microscopic, instrumental, and comparative examination revealed the following. The author attributions accompanying the questioned articles were added to Exhibits 1 and 2 after the newspapers were printed. The process used to insert the names resulted in the text being indented into the surface of the page. The other newspaper text is not indented. In addition, a previous entry was eradicated from the name area on page 2 of Exhibit 2. The paper surface was damaged in the process. Their remarks, this is sort of dicta, should testimony be required, notify the laboratory and return the evidence at least 5 days in advance. The evidence was delivered on May 30 and will be returned by Federal Express. There is nothing else in that report that can be looked at and used to conclude that those documents were fraudulent. Yes, we concede the author attributions were added after publication. That does not make the article fraudulent. It does not prove who wrote it. It does not prove who didn't write it. It only says what the forensics report says. They were added after.
If the articles were originally printed without author attribution, how did the government know that Heise was the author? If their abuse of him was based on his authorship of the articles, they would have to know he was the author.
Well, Heise was an activist. He would go to meetings where he would speak. The record shows that. His testimony actually is after he had been abducted, beaten up by these thugs, he went to a meeting and said he had been abducted and threatened and beaten up. That's how the government knew who he was and that he was a threat to them.
No, but how did they know that he wrote the articles in question?
Heise had written other articles, and the record establishes that. The expert, now the respondents argue that all his conclusions, as does the IJ, are based on the articles. Not true. The expert actually traveled to Albania, was on the scene, spoke to witnesses. He lists the witnesses and what they told him. They knew of Heise. They knew he was an author. They knew he was writing for these papers. They knew he was an activist. He had been in the previous regime, and he had been agitating for the government's return of property to its rightful owners. And so this guy was not a low profile, maybe not a high profile guy.
What evidence establishes that Mr. Heise wrote these articles?
There isn't, Your Honor.
There's no evidence.
There is no evidence that establishes that he wrote them, but there is no evidence that establishes that he did not write them.
Well, whose burden is it?
Your Honor, we can toss those articles out, but there's other evidence which the IJ did not look at, because the IJ, as I read from the passage from April 8 of 2002, from the trial transcript at page 176, which is administrative record page 228, the IJ decided then how it was going to go. If anything comes back fraudulent, I don't consider anything else. And that's what the IJ concluded. But the problem is the article has not been found to be fraudulent. All we know and all this report says, the author attributions were added after. That's all we know. We don't know anything else. Yes, we don't know that High C is the author, but we don't know that he isn't.
In other words, you're saying that High C didn't stake his claim on the two newspaper articles that he allegedly wrote.
He presented the articles, and that, by its very presence, is staking part of his claim on those articles.
He didn't just present the articles. He presented the articles as having been written by him.
That is correct, Judge Sykes.
And to the extent of doctoring them to put his name on them.
Your Honor, he presented articles that have his name on them. We don't know that he had put the name on the articles. There is no evidence in this record that establishes that. There is a distinction. Somebody put the name on the article, but we don't know who put the name on the article. I have scoured the record, and that evidence is not in this record. He presented the article. I concede that. And that presentation may lead you to infer something. Now, I would live with the IJ coming back and saying, I have a problem with your case because, look, you're presenting an article that we found was printed without your name, but it has. But she foreclosed that. She said, if it comes back with any document that has any problem, you're done for. But she also says, send the medical reports to the documents lab for examination. We come back on the 8th, it hasn't been done. She doesn't say anything about that. So, the question that I beg you, the court, to ask is, what about the other evidence? Does this finding automatically wash away all the other evidence? What about the judge's focus on the medical evidence?
Does perjury toss out all other evidence in most trials?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, but that's an area on which I'm not an expert. And I'm not an expert on any area, for that matter, but I don't regularly practice in that area, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Goldman. Mr. Goldman, if you feel that you need an extra 2 minutes, we're going to give it to you because we went over.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Dan Goldman on behalf of the Attorney General. This Court should uphold the agency decision and deny the petition for review. There's been a lot of talk today about what actually happened in this case. Maybe he wrote the articles. Maybe he added the attributions later. Maybe he wrote the articles and the attributions were there, and as they are, and has been argued by Mr. Heise in his brief, he didn't get the opportunity to cross-examine the expert, which would imply that he challenges the expert's findings. All of these possibilities are interesting, but they ignore the standard of review before this Court. Mr. Heise has a very tough burden when he walks into this Court. He has to show that the evidence compels reversal. Not that there are other possibilities, not that maybe he wrote the articles and added the attributions later. All of those are beside the point. And I should say, that's not my words or the Attorney General's words. That's the Supreme Court saying in the Elias Zacharias case, all these other possibilities beside the point. The question, and it's a narrow one, is does the evidence compel reversal? In this case, the immigration judge boiled it down. She said very simply, after hearing all the evidence, your case hinges on whether or not you've authored these articles. I want a forensics report, and based on the results of that report, either you win or you lose. There's been discussion today about what the report does or does not say, and I would agree with petitioner's counsel that the report does not say that the articles are frauds. It doesn't say that. What it says is the bylines were added after the articles were published. I think at some level there's a common sense argument to be made here. If he wrote the articles, why did he need to add an attribution line? In a sense, he could have foreclosed all of this discussion if he had simply said, here's the article, I wrote it, and if it didn't have a byline on it. There may have been questions about why there was no byline, but we wouldn't have been talking about a forensics expert, whether there was an opportunity to respond to a forensics expert, none of that. And again, it comes back to what exactly is Mr. Heise's version of events? And I don't want to foreclose that time-honored tradition of arguing in the alternative, but Mr. Heise has taken it to a new level here. Maybe he wrote the articles, maybe he wrote the articles and added the attributions later, maybe the forensics report got it wrong. Again, he's certainly allowed to argue in the alternative, but in this case in particular, the fact that he's never come forward and said, here's the version of events that I believe happened, undercuts his entire case. And again, it comes back to that burden of proof. It's simply not enough to say, here's a bunch of other possibilities. I think to address a couple of other points briefly that were raised in Mr. Heise's reply brief and were raised earlier as well, the idea that he somehow had no opportunity to respond to this forensics report is simply not accurate. And the language that he uses in his brief is that it was sprung on him at this October 8th hearing. Your Honor, with all due respect, I'm not from Chicago, but that's like saying that the cold weather in January was sprung on me here in Chicago. That hearing was scheduled for the very purpose of getting that forensics report. To say that it was sprung on him or was a surprise simply is not fair or accurate. To say that he didn't have the opportunity to respond, that fails again on several levels. Mr. Heise had the opportunity to say to the immigration judge, you want to send that out for a government forensics report? Well, then I want the same opportunity. Let's make this into a battle of experts. I'll go get my own expert to test that.
Does the fact that it was substitute counsel that day come into the argument?
I don't think it does for a couple of reasons, Your Honor. Number one, original counsel was there when the immigration judge said, I want to send this out for a forensics report. So right then and there, counsel could have said, I want to get our own expert. I want the opportunity to do that. That wasn't said. It could have been said after the hearing, while the investigation was being done by the forensics lab. It wasn't said. And it certainly could have been said after the report came back on October 8th. Now, substitute counsel was there that day, but October 9th, motion to reopen, motion to reconsider, motion to allow for a new report to rebut the government's report. And it certainly could have been said after the immigration judge's decision, which came out months later. So to suggest that Mr. Heise had no opportunity to respond to a report that was somehow sprung on him is just simply not accurate or fair in this case. To address the concern that was raised earlier, these articles, the two articles in question, were the basis for his claim. In the record at page 202, Mr. Heise is asked very specifically, what's your claim based on? Do you have other articles? I have other articles, but these are the two that he says are important to my claim that I'm basing my claim on. That's the claim that he brings before the immigration court. So to come in here today and say maybe there's some other articles that are the basis ignores what he argued originally to the immigration court. Your Honor, subject to the court's questions, the government would rest on its brief. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Oh, you had used up all of your time and more, but I will give you a minute if you can.
Thank you, Your Honor. I really appreciate it. In response to the issue regarding being given an opportunity, again, I go back to Judge Smith's language. She said what was going to happen, and that's exactly what happened. It's not a perfect world. And immigration court is a tough environment. I mean, it's a jungle out there. And so, yeah, in a perfect world, you would hope that counsel would have asked the court to reopen and let other forensics examiners look at the documents. But the record was being moved to Judge Smith in Florida, and Judge Smith had written out the edges of her decision on April 8th of 2002. She said what was going to happen. Regarding Mr. Heise's staking his position or his case or claim on these two articles, I don't think his own words are the, you know, end all. You have a record that has expert testimony in it and other documentary evidence that you can look at which supports what contentions we're making. Yes, he said these articles are important, but you can't ignore the fact that he had written other articles, that he had activities which brought the government's focus on him. This was not a vacuum. He had activities, not just the articles, and his testimony clearly establishes it. Yes, if you look at a particular page and a particular line, you'll find it, because a particular question was put to him. But if you look at the record as a whole, what does it say to you? And I urge the court, most respectfully, to reverse the IJ's decision.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Mwangi, and thank you, Mr. Goldman.